Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake.
It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at justaskvi. That's vi.com.
WBT, a radio.com station.
Well, good morning, Charlotte and the Carolinas. Welcome to Carolina Focus. We're your weekly public affairs program right here on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, and 102.5 610 WFNZ. Sharon Forslund and I are your co-hosts, so let's get started as Sharon caught up with Greg Walter at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
So today on Carolina Focus, we have a very special guest. We have the Executive Vice President and General Manager of Charlotte Motor Speedway, Greg Walter. Greg, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, I know that it's been a crazy week of racing. Charlotte held 4 races in 5 days, and I do definitely want to get into speaking about that. But first, I want to talk about this really, really neat event that you guys are hosting this Friday and Saturday at the Speedway. I know that you're having the Concord High School graduations. Tell us, how did that come about that you're going to be hosting graduations at the Speedway?
Sharon, actually about 2 weeks into the pandemic and the quarantine, the stay-at-home orders, you know, our folks here have this promoter mentality. And so we can't sit on our hands. And so a couple of them had come up with the idea, hey, what about drive-in movies, graduations, what can we do? And we actually reached out to the governor's office, and I think there was an abundance of caution. It's like, wait, y'all settle down over there. You know, we know what you do, but this is too early. And then actually, Superintendent Mark Johnson's office reached out to us and said, would it be possible, would we be open to it? And I'm like, oh my gosh, absolutely. Our first allegiance though was to Cabarrus County, being that we're in Cabarrus County.
Right.
So, and then at the same time, we work in a parallel path with the governor's office to get racing approved and the race teams open back up. So we told the superintendent's office, y'all be sure to go down the hallway and tell your boss that, you know, we're okay to do this, right? And then once we started working with them in the Cabarrus County, it all kind of fell into place. We're in the event business. You know, we help people make memories. We do big things. And this was actually fun. And the fact that we had this unique asset in Speedway TV, it's the world's second largest outdoor TV screen. And the way to do it, to be able to use that as a kind of a drive-in theater, if you will, and then the students to be able to come around and get the diploma across the finish line, metaphorically, it's exciting. So it's all kind of come together. We refined it over the last couple of weeks, and I think we'll have a great plan for the weekend.
So tell us exactly how this is going to work. I mean, I don't know how many of our listeners have actually been inside Charlotte Motor Speedway, but it is huge, and when you're inside, especially in the infield, it's like, wow, this place is humongous. And I know I've seen that TV up close and in person, and it is huge. How exactly is it going to work? Like, are graduates going to be able to come in with their families? Will they stay in their cars? Tell us the exact procedure of what's going to be happening.
Sure. So each school will have their time slots. We're trying to get as many done as possible, and we have 10 schools over that time period you described. So that's about 2,300 students we've got to get processed and through the loop. So they will come in through the back gate in the tunnel, and they'll actually come inside the bowl, if you will, inside the track. We'll position the cars so they're facing the big screen TV, just like you would for a drive-in movie. On the front stretch, which is the exact opposite side of the track, on the front stretch will be a stage where the principal, dignitaries, VIPs, the valedictorian, whoever speaks, will go through the normal graduation ceremonies. All of that will be on the big TV. and broadcast through a short FM transmitter. So you'd be listening to it just like you would a drive-in movie, right?
Okay.
And then the students will come around when it's time to, if you will, start your engines. The families, and each family's in a car, the families will come around. They'll come around turns 3 and 4 if you've been to the track. Come to the start-finish line. Some of the schools are going to have the teachers kind of form this corridor of congratulations, or as a student drives up with their family, teachers are able to wave and say hello, congratulate the students. You remember, a lot of the teachers haven't seen these kids since, I guess, mid-March.
Yeah,
and March so this 13th. Will be kind of a time of reconnection, right? So that the families will drive up, and then some of this is still being refined, given the changes in phase two. But the way it's planned now is the families will drive up and then actually will drive up for their diploma.
Okay.
And then cross the finish line, and there's a photo op afterwards. And then I believe the families, all the students are going to take a lap around the track, kind of a celebration lap, if you will. There has been talk about refining it to where the student may get out of the car, come up on stage, get the diploma, and then get back in. We're going to defer to the school board and schools officials to see what makes sense. Some of the schools, because of the size of the graduating class, makes it difficult to pull that off. We'd be here, 24 hours a day if we did that. Because they also need to make allowance for the emotion, right? I mean, here it is. Your high school senior is getting their diploma. They graduated from high school. One of those big threshold moments in life.
Yeah.
And so the families want to get out, take pictures. And so we kind of make allowance for the emotional factor, that if we say it's 60 seconds to go through the process, well, maybe with the family taking pictures, it may take 2 minutes or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So trying to get everyone in and stay on schedule for the day. Because what you don't want to happen is one school to back it up and then another school, or even two schools are kind of punished because one ceremony went long. So the logistics are kind of to be sorted out, but we want to make this as memorable as possible. We're actually going to stream it on our YouTube channel. So
oh, wow.
If family can't be here, if grandparents are away and can't travel, they'll actually be able to watch the whole ceremony.
Oh, that's awesome.
On the Charlotte Nurse Speedway YouTube channel. Yeah, we're figuring it out. This is kind of new for all of us, but we're figuring it out. Our other tracks have done it. Like Texas did it over 8 days, and then I think like 30,000 kids. But they just kind of locked down the whole facility. Our track rental business is so busy out here with driving schools, et cetera, that we're kind of shoehorn everything in. But I think it's going to be really unique. The feedback we're getting so far has been grateful. I think even those who were kind of naysayers are beginning to warm the idea of, wow, we could actually do this at the Speedway. And what more iconic facility than this? Well, this is our 60th anniversary. So the fact that you're here celebrating with us it's in our DNA to make people feel good. And so I think that we'll pull it off really well.
I can't imagine a cool way to have graduation. Remembering my own graduation a million years ago, you're in the football stadium and it's boring. This, to be able to come into the Speedway in that huge, awesome facility to drive on the track. I mean, even for somebody who's not necessarily race fan, how cool is that to be able to go around the entire track and have everything up on the big screen? I mean, I think that it's going to be one of the absolutely more unique ways to do a graduation, even if it was normal time.
We hope so. And actually, we've gotten a call from a couple of schools that say, hey, can we do this again in 21? And I'm like, well, let's just get through 20 first. And then we'll talk about 21. But, if you had the ability for people to get out of cars and congregate, maybe do fireworks shows at night, that kind of thing, you can really make it a truly memorable experience.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really neat. Now, when the cars do come around, are they going to announce each graduate's name, or will their car be up on the big screen, or how does it, where they're actually getting their diploma, how will that work?
Well, actually, their name will be announced on the big screen.
Okay.
It's a little bit to coordinate faces and names with the car coming around. I think it's even tough to do it when you do a normal ceremony. But this is when the car comes around, the family or the student will have a placard or card they give to an attendant who will take it up to the speaker who announced, now graduating, Sharon Thorsland. They'll give you the diploma. There is a lot of the schools are talking about pre-ceremony videos, right? So maybe a picture of the student in their cap and gown, phone up on the screen. And so we've been really open to however a school wants to creatively depict that. There may be like yearbook pictures and memories of the year that they want to put on the screen. And we've kind of worked with each school to kind of come up with something unique that makes sense, right? Because when you come in and you're sitting there waiting for things to start, there's usually, even at a normal graduation ceremony, there's normally something being played or memories that are reflected upon. We want to do the same thing here. So we'll do that with our big screen as well.
Now, I know that it's a big deal to open up the track and have to have all these people in there. And then just the employees that have to support this and do this. Is this something that you guys have worked out with the state? Are they paying for this? Or is this something that you guys are just doing for them? Or how is that working?
Well, we are we're covering our costs, right? I have to pay the employees, but like the facility rental, we're giving a lot. We're not charging what we would charge to actually host the facility for the day. We've had to move some revenue paying things to make allowance for this. So I've got to pay the employees. I got to bring vendors in to help operate the television. So they're covering those costs, but this was never intended to be one of these big revenue things for us. Sure. This was something with the community. You know, we have always been dedicated to giving back. So whether it's helping Atrium with the mobile COVID testing, whether it's the food drives we do out here, the clothing drives, Speedway Children's Charities giving millions of dollars to local charities. It's just who we are. And this was something that, hey, there's a problem. We think we can solve it. We presented our assets here. Here's what we think we can do. And everyone bought off on it. So this is exciting for us, rewarding. The team has been really energized. We're not talking about just race cars going around fast. Yeah. We're talking about cars going around very slow. But the fact that we're able to help people make these memories, I mean, that's rewarding in and of itself.
I think it's phenomenal. I think it's just the greatest way to have, just like I was saying, I mean, this unique in regular times to be able to have your high school graduation inside of a huge NASCAR track. So I say kudos to you guys at the Speedway for doing this. I think it's outstanding.
Thank you. Yeah, we're excited to just do something different, right? But the fact that seeing these families, having them see their teachers again, right, and provide a safe way to do that. We worked with the Cabarrus Health Alliance. We showed them what we're doing, and they bought off on it. We wanted to be sure that local officials felt comfortable with the process that we're going through. So, hopefully you might talk after it's all over and recap, because we're excited about it. We are really, really excited about doing this.
That's what I was going to ask you next about the safety aspects of it. Obviously, if people are in their cars anyway, that's about as safe as you can get. So, and you said you did check with the local health officials and stuff to make sure that everything was hitting the guidelines of what you need to do.
We did. And even to the point where you can't expect everyone to sit in their car and not go to the bathroom, right? So I have bathroom facilities, porta-johns that we will industrial clean, just like we did for the NASCAR race. So there'll be extra staff here to perform in cleaning afterwards, being sure that there's separation bathroom-wise, only a couple people in the bathroom at a time. There's still a huge responsibility to do this right. And regardless of where people fall on the perception spectrum of what is right, what is wrong, what kind of precautions we should take, we have a fiduciary responsibility to the community to get it right and not be a source of perhaps angst or even, you know, infection. So we take it very seriously. And a lot of the expense actually is providing those kind of facilities and cleaning to be sure. Because once you have one school come through, you got to clean to have the next one come through.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're going to turn that around. But we are mindful of the responsibility we have.
Now, you were saying that after they go up and get their diploma, however that actually ends up occurring, they're going to have a photo op. Is Lugnut going to be around there to have a social distancing photo op?
If they want Lugnut, I'm happy to get Lugnut here. Most of them have their own mascots or such, but you know, we don't want to overlay too much of who we are on them. But
I got you.
You know, we did take down some of the sponsor signage. We didn't want to be like, you know, they had to have all this Coca-Cola signage behind them. But Lugnut can be there, and then, you know, they'll take a lap around the track, which would be kind of cool. It's kind of neat to be able to go onto the track and perhaps up on the embankment a little bit. We hope it'll be as memorable as it's planned out to be.
Yeah, it sounds like it absolutely will be. Now, I know that Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system, the way they're doing their graduations is basically all virtual. And I don't know if they reached out to you or if that would even be a possibility because they are so huge. Is that something that would have taken a long time to get through?
Actually, Sharon, sorry. I pursued them. I actually reached out and made a connection to them. Took a little bit to find the right person. And just their logistics, the way they're set up, the diversity of schools, you have some that are enormous and you have some that are smaller. And we would have had to close down the track for like 5 days is what we figured out and just weren't able to pull off all the logistics. And it was like with the last minute, I think they had to make some recommendations like the next day.
Yeah.
But we were willing. And I think there may be some things down the road that we can help them with. But, you know, they were doing the best they can given the resources they have and taking into account the diversity of the schools that are part of that system. So we were here, and if they ever want to us, we'd love to be able to help that group as well.
Great. Now, you were saying that early on in all of this pandemic stuff that you contemplated possibly doing drive-in movies. Is that anything else like that on the table besides these graduations and unusual use of the facility?
Well, absolutely. So we're looking at the Charlotte Rescue Mission did some drive-in movies to help do a fundraiser because people can't have their normal balls or galas right now. So we're trying to utilize the facility to do that. I think our own Speedway Children's Charity is going to use the big screen to do some drive-in movies as well. It's just kind of neat. Summertime, get out, and you get this big TV to put to use. We're also looking at the concert space. So with fans not being able to get back into an arena, right, into a closed environment, is there a way to do it in a drive-in? So where, say a band is performing live at the track, and then we actually project that up onto the big screen as well.
Oh,
so you're actually going to imagine your favorite artist, right? And then you actually do it as a drive-in. And
wow.
You see it on the screen, you hear it on the radio or the transmitter, and then you also get the bands there live. So we think there's some merit in that, exploring that right now. Hope to have some news to announce pretty soon. Don't tell anybody, that's really secret. But I think you know, it's us looking at with circumstances in the world changing. How do we remain relevant? Because we're still in the people business.
Yeah.
And we have some unique assets here that we can apply and do things differently. And we're open to that.
That's I think that's it's really neat and very innovative, the things you guys are coming up with. And lest we forget, how could we forget? We've had some serious racing up there at the Speedway. ended up being 4 races in 5 days instead of 4 and 4 because of the rain delay of the Xfinity race. What's your initial reaction to how you guys pulled stuff off?
You know, there was a lot of planning. There was a lot of effort in reassuring both the state and local levels that we were going to get this right. We got some coaching. We presented them a plan, and then they looked at it and gave some feedback as to how to go from good to great. And what was interesting was we got a lot of inquiries from other sports and other venues. How are you doing this? How are you going about doing this? When we got down to it, it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. Because I think, Sharon, what the aha for me was that when you try to do something like this, the whole ecosystem needs to buy off on it.
Yeah.
And in this case, everybody did. NASCAR did a great job of leading this and making sure that we all understood what our roles were. And we had great partners like Atrium who helped us kind of develop the screening process and conduct it here. So we had folks from Atrium actually doing the forehead checks. The team. So you had all these people in the infield and every one of them, you know, had their masks on. No exceptions. Everyone took it very, very seriously. And I applaud everyone in our sport for getting it done. But when you had that baseline acceptance, the processes were easy. We got it done. Exceptions were handled in terms of, hey, we didn't think about this. We did a lot of scripting and kind of not role playing, but thinking through the whole journey of the day. And so we were able to anticipate a lot. We learned some things from Darlington. You know, Carrie Tharp was very gracious in sharing, hey, this is what I would have done differently. And then we took our playbook and handed it to Bristol. And so Bristol conducted their races and they'll hand it to the next track. So I think by the time we get through the month of June, it'll be a very refined process. But I was excited. I mean, the racing was good. To see these drivers like go straight from their car and get, you know, straight from their motorhome and get in the car,
yeah,
you know, cold, created some really interesting dynamics. They didn't have a time to test on it. We put the PJ1 down. The track prep went well, but they didn't have any chance at all to kind of like feel it out. So it created some like anxiousness. I talked to a couple of drivers. They were a little puckered up on getting out there and not having any practice. But at the end, we were able to put some live events on television. The feedback from the fans was very understanding. They understood why we did what we did. But our hope is that we're able to conduct some events out here very soon with fans back in the stands in some configuration.
Absolutely. And it seems like from the time all of this happened and everything had to be suspended to the time, starting with Darlington, but NASCAR and you guys, for the time you guys put it together, it happened so quickly. I mean, was it like long days of planning and trying to figure out how we can do this?
It was. I mean, it was a lot. We had been working on the playbook for a while. But then once we got the green light, it was Katie bar the door. And also working with a minimal staff, right? We didn't want to bring a lot of people in. We had been, you know, following the governor's orders that only essential staff and everyone needed to stay at home. So there were lots of Zoom meetings like this where we were trying to get things conducted. But it was a lot of long hours, but we're event people. So that just fuels the fire.
The challenge.
And then we collapse the day. We just collapse the day after. So, but to see it all come together, that's the reward. That's the reward, is to say, hey, we worked so hard and it pulled it off, because truly the eyes of the country were on us to be sure that
Absolutely.
We got it right.
Absolutely. And judging from watching it on TV, I mean, you pulled it off just wonderfully. Did you guys go to Darlington or send a rep to Darlington to see how they were doing it? So, and to take that information back home with you here to Charlotte?
We did, actually. It's myself, our senior vice president of operations, our chief experience officer, two other folks in our staff all went down there. I know that Concord sent the city manager and the police chief so they could see firsthand, and we all kind of shared notes the Monday afterwards. And it was helpful. You know, you have this document, right? But when you see, and you know this in your own life, is that when you, written words take on a different meaning when you see it in 3D, right? When you see
Absolutely.
It up. And so to actually see, oh, this is what they meant. Oh, this is what this looks like. It was pretty close, but it was incredibly helpful to see how it all kind of came together. Getting the notification the night before to check symptoms. You know, do you have any symptoms? You know, going through that process, checking in, being screened again, and then the segregation between people on the inside and outside to be sure that there were no cross-contamination, how they were cleaning. And like, okay, well, that's unique. That way they did this was unique to Darlington. Now, how do we make that true for Charlotte? And that's what each of the tracks are faced with, is how do you use your unique physical landscape or attributes and use those to your benefit or to make the processes even better?
I would assume, I mean, obviously just hosting one race in a week is a huge thing. To do four in such a short period of time, having just the regular race logistics and so many at one time, plus having to have all of these safety elements implemented, that must have been, I mean, that just seems like it would be almost overwhelming. I mean, that seems like it must have been quite the tall task.
It was, and the fact that, for instance, when on Sunday for the Coca-Cola 600, you had all the teams and all the officials for the Cup Series come in. And then once they left, we locked it down and went through this industrial cleaning for the entire facility. And it was, you know, is everyone out? The process, there was a new playbook for us. And so following that, there was a lot of checking, double checking, triple checking, because, you know, we had to have zero tolerance for mistakes. That created stress, right? To being sure that, you know, all of us, you know, did our proper jobs. Fortunately, I'm blessed to work with some amazing people. So they made it look easy, but there was a lot of exhaustion on the Friday morning after that Thursday night race.
I was going to say, I mean, what time? I mean, it seems like it was probably activity 24/7 there, because by the time, especially the night races, well, really everything ended at night, by the time they were over, and then to have to come in and break everything down, clean everything. I mean, what time were you guys even shutting down at night and the last person leave the track?
Yeah, everyone had different roles. I mean, I think I was here most nights till after midnight, 1 a.m. Our ops team, some of those folks didn't leave till 4:35 and then come back at 9 or 10 the next day. Wow. We had to paint the walls. And then you had weather, right? Weather was a factor. So we're docking storms, trying to get the visuals and aesthetics of the track, at least what would be seen by the camera, up to our standards. So I looked out the window one night. There must have been like 20 people with paintbrushes painting the wall just to kind of get it done fast. People, you know, cleaning up the grass logos, the turf logos. So everyone had their roles. And then we were all here at the same time. So some we were really early in the morning, worked till 10 or so. Some were here till, like I said, 4:30 in the morning and come back at 10. So it's, but again, it's really unique. Once you get that adrenaline of putting on events, so whether it's a graduation or a drive-in movie or a NASCAR race, there's just something addictive about it, right? Just the ability to collectively work toward a goal and then put on an event. And then when you see people leave here with these big smiles on their faces and you see on social media, oh my gosh, we had an amazing time. That's when the high fives around here start. Yeah. That's when people are like, yes, did you see that? Gosh, that was awesome, man. Did you see this one? And the team gets a lot of satisfaction off of that. So it's just the business and the business that we're in, the DNA we have.
Absolutely. Now, I've heard from some of the drivers that the weirdest thing about all of this was the silence, the quiet. What struck you as most unusual? What did you walk in and say, wow, this was really different than normal? Or what stood out the most to you about the whole situation?
What stood out to me the most about the situation was Victory Lane. That's where it really kind of came together. It was the aha moment for me, because this driver has fought arduously for hours and hundreds of miles, pulls into Victory Lane, gets out. There's one person from NASCAR, and then there was one of our staff. It was usually me. And driver comes in and gets out of the car and yells, and no one's there. There's no cheers. There may be a couple of crew members, but everyone was told to distance and stay apart. And to have Chase Elliott in Victory Lane Thursday night, and it's like, okay, somebody makes some noise, right? He's like, I'm waiting to check the flag. Somebody, like, cheer. That was the big part of it, that energy that comes with hearing a driver win the race, the crowd responding. And then actually, so in Victory Lane, we tried something new. We did a virtual trophy presentation. So the trophy was in Victory Lane. And we have these great partners like Coca-Cola and Alsco and the lottery. And so we had to figure out, how do we engage the sponsor with the Victory Lane experience? So we did a Zoom call. So we had a big screen TV and a camera and a microphone. So once the driver finished their interview, pointed over, do you mind letting the sponsor give the presentation to you? So, you know, Kyle Busch comes over and he's talking to the first time we did it was a little computer screen like this. And so he's kind of leaning over to see who the sponsor is. We figured out by Thursday that we do a big flat panel TV and a microphone and speakers so you could hear. And it was neat. It was neat to be able to do that. We actually, Thursday night, Sharon, we actually had, we did a Zoom call with our staff because a lot of people weren't here. We had about 50% of the people who work full-time for us actually here to help conduct the race. So we actually set up a Zoom call in Victory Lane so they could watch all that happen. And then we kind of did a toast afterwards. You know, listen, it couldn't happen without everyone.
That's great.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. That's the tough part of this is having the culture and connection, even though we're doing it, you know, virtually. There's actually something to be said for seeing people and being in their presence. So to be able to do something to connect to the staff was encouraging.
That's great. Now, I know that things are still not set in stone with the NASCAR schedule because we don't know where everything's going to be occurring. But as of right now, you guys are still supposed to have another race, at least one. And if this goes as scheduled in October, if you don't have anything before then, I'm assuming that you'll be able to take everything that you guys went through with these first four races and tweak it, do anything different? How did this prepare you for the next one?
I think that all sports are looking at how do you move forward in this under these new conditions. When we're allowed to have fans back, what does that look like? Does that look like, you know, are we going to be 6 feet apart? Are we going to be two rows apart? So we're looking at modeling for how that works. And I think all sports are.
Right.
The indoor facilities have more of a challenge than the outdoor facilities.
Well, certainly it's been a lot to address, a lot to change. And you guys, I know that in your long history, y'all have certainly been in the forefront of doing things like that. So I'm looking forward to the next race, whenever that may be. And I know that these kids from Concord, from all the Concord high schools, have got to be just thrilled to be able to come out there Friday and Saturday and have these really neat graduation ceremonies. So thank you so much, Greg Walter, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Charlotte Motor Speedway. Thank you so much for joining us today, talking about these graduations and also about the races at the Speedway and those yet to come. So we appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
All right. Thanks so much, Greg.
Sure thing. Absolutely.
Thanks, Sharon. Stay tuned. More Carolina Focus coming up right after this.
WBT, a radio.com station.
Well, welcome back to Carolina Focus here on this first Sunday in June 2020. We are your public affairs program right here on News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, and 610 102.5 WFNZ. It is I, Ed Billick, along with Sharon Thorsland. We are your hosts, and welcome to the second half hour of Carolina Focus. Let's get started with Bo Thompson, who spoke with our cybersecurity expert, Teresa Payton, on a few scary topics in social media.
On the WBT hotline, as she always is at this time of week, our cybersecurity expert, Teresa Payton. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well, Bill. Always great to talk with you.
Same here. And it's been a heavy week. I think we can all agree on that for many reasons. Of course, we've been dominated by the coverage of the shooting of George Floyd in Minneapolis and all of the protests that has given rise to across the country. And there is a cyber aspect of this, unfortunately, one that I can't believe we're talking about this. But then again, I guess I can. There have been instances of false rumors and doctored images that have gone viral during the coverage of this. And, you know, here's the thing. We're covering the protests in Charlotte. Unlike 2016, when Charlotte was the main focus because of an incident that happened here. I've talked a lot this week about the fact that, you know, this is happening in Charlotte again, but it's happening all across the country in big cities and small towns. And because of that, that means that the net is running rampant with stories and footage and people talking about rumors of this and that. And sometimes those rumors can be manipulated for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And what's frustrating to me about it, Bo, is it detracts from what the real issue is here. And so for example, and I wrote about this in an article for Business Insider, I was watching Washington, D.C., just like everybody was, unfold on social media. And I see this photo circulating saying that D.C. is on fire and the church next to the White House, which I run by all the time when I'm up in Washington, D.C., that it was on fire. And I thought, these photos look unbelievable, like a movie or some TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, one of the photos was actually a doctored photo from Designated Survivor. And what frustrates me about it is somebody may see that and think, oh, I was going to go join these peaceful protests to combat racism, and now I'm not going to go. I don't want to be in the middle of all that. And the images were not true. So it's really, really challenging. And what I want people to remember is oftentimes these manipulation campaigns are designed to get you to act a certain way or to not act at all. And just be aware and do your fact checking.
Well, another topic of conversation this week with all of the protesting going on, and we understand why it's happening, but people aren't social distancing when they're out in this. The cops aren't, the participants aren't, the media's not. I mean, some people are wearing face coverings, but social distancing is kind of out the window just by the definition of what we're talking about, these protests. And social distancing when you go to the airport, I'm sure that's something that people think about with trepidation. There's actually news out this week that there's a company in Miami, their airport there is one of the first to test drive this. It's a technology called Safe Distance. And the company that makes this this app, or at least this digital capability, is called CrowdVision, where you have people moving along in the airport, and there are cameras on the ceiling, and those cameras keep track of where everybody is. And then that sends data, as I understand it, back to a central point where I guess they can see hot spots and know where places need attention. Is that how you're understanding this?
That's how I'm understanding it as well. And so what's different about, you know, you and I have talked about contact tracing, which is, you know, download an app to your phone and tracking you via your phone. This is actually surveillance technology using cameras that are placed in the ceiling. So I have a lot of questions about what those cameras are capturing. And then once they see the red, yellow, like what happens? Does somebody send, hopefully they send maybe like service dogs out so we can social distance and pet the dogs or something like that, because that always makes me happy. But what do they do? Like, how do they get people to spread out? Are they going to have X's taped to the floor and say, everybody get to your dot? Is it going to be more like, you know, kind of some type of like colored dots or something? It's fascinating. And a lot of airports that I travel in, Bo, are definitely not designed to stand 6 feet apart for every person that you're interacting with or waiting in line with. So it'll be interesting to see how they do this.
Well, and that's just in the airport. What about when you actually get on the plane? It's even tougher to get that distance you need in that confined space, but that's enough for an entire other segment, which I'm sure will be down the line for us. Okay, so right after we talked last week in our segment, the news came out that President Trump had signed that executive order targeting social media companies. And now, about a week later, just last night, this news came out that the president has now been sued because of the action he is attempting to take here with the executive order. What's going on here? A lot to unpack.
There is a lot to unpack. And so the Center for Democracy and Technology, which is an advocacy group that's trying to make sure that consumers have civil rights as it relates to the internet and technology, privacy, they filed a lawsuit saying that the executive order created by the White House actually is targeting First Amendment protected speech. So essentially they're saying it's unlawful, and they filed this lawsuit. It'll be interesting to see where this goes, Bo.
So the lawsuit is filed by the firm Mayer Brown, and what is interesting about this is the fact that this lawsuit uses President Trump's own tweets as evidence, if I'm reading this right.
Yeah, it does. The lawsuit itself is about 37 pages, but about almost 5 pages of it actually uses his tweets to make the case for suing against the executive order. And I have to say, Bo, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. I've never seen where a case against the White House or the president or an administration actually uses pages and pages upon tweets. So it's got a date and timestamp. I've seen where they've referred to emails or interviews in newspapers or conversations. But this basically goes tweet by tweet, date and timestamp, and has the specific tweets in there. And it's really quite an interesting read.
Just the idea of President Trump taking the executive action last week in the first place, what was your reaction to that?
That it was unprecedented, and I feel like every day is an unprecedented day. it's one of those things where, it's very challenging with an executive order to really understand in practice how it's going to play out in the private sector, because the executive order is really targeting how the regulatory agencies and departments and agencies behave, which then in turn can then say, well, we're going to hold you accountable to a higher standard. But until it's actually codified into some type of a law on the Hill, you can't compel the private sector to do anything except for through regulatory frameworks that come out of executive orders. So I wasn't really quite sure where it was going to go. And it's interesting. So it hasn't gone very far, and there's already the first lawsuit.
Well, and I think it probably has a long way to go. I think we can probably agree on that. And we'll continue to cover this. Teresa, as always, thank you so much. Follow Teresa on Twitter at Tracker Payton, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, great. Take care.
Well, thanks, Bo. Very interesting each and every time you speak with Teresa Payton. Well, Sharon and I were discussing how well do we know the new head coach of the Carolina Panthers, Matt Rhule. So we grabbed some clips from his press conference this week where he spoke about being a leader, the future of Luke Kuechly. What's the training camp look like since they're not going to Spartanburg? And his time at Western Carolina and the relationships he built. So here is our new head coach of the Carolina Panthers, Matt Rhule, as he discusses his philosophy on leadership.
Well, I think it takes courage to lead. It takes courage to act. You know, I mean, it's, you know, we talk about like being a leader in the locker room, you're being a football leader. You know, there's a lot of courage that goes with that, you know, because you have to be willing, you know, when you're a player, you have to be willing to know that, hey, you're going to mess up at some point. You know, and so that's the hardest thing for players is they have sometimes don't want to be, you know, lead and tell other guys what to do because they know eventually they're going to make a mistake on the field and they don't, you know. And I think it takes tremendous courage to step out of your comfort zone and say, hey, guys, let's go this way. Let's go that way. So I think, you know, when guys do that off the field and whatever issues they have, whether it's battling, you know, the coronavirus, whether it's issues of racism, you know, defeating racism in our country, whatever the issues are that they stand up for. I think that takes courage. And, you know, at the end of the day, if I can go back to one thing I said I really believe in, it's when players understand that football isn't their purpose in life. You know, it's their passion. It might be their gift, but, you know, it's not their purpose. And so when they understand that, I'm a coach. I love the coach, but it's not my purpose in life. And so when we understand that, then it makes things way bigger than just, hey, I got to just worry about football. So, again, I'm just supporting every player that we have with whatever decisions they make, not just right now in this instance, but in all the things that they decide to do in their lives, the foundations and organizations and, you know, community service, all the things that they do.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Coach. Good to talk to you, man. When it comes to leading, you said it takes courage and it takes some guts to kind of step out and take that first step of faith. Is that harder for you being in a new city like Charlotte? Is that, have you found that you want to be cautious with that, or you don't really know how to approach it, or how has that been different for you just because you're new?
Oh, I mean, I think, you know, when I was saying that, I was referring to the players, you know, kind of on the field. I think for me, you know, I think my job is to lead, you know, the team and the coaching staff as best I can. So, you know, I'll take this time, you know, this 30 minutes with you guys, I'll, you know, we'll release a statement, but it's the day in, day out interactions I have with our players and our coaches and our staff, obviously that will lead to the things will happen on the field football wise. And then hopefully, you know, off the field as well. So, you know, I think for me, you know, we moved into our house on a Saturday and then on a Wednesday we were stay at home. You know, I haven't really been back to the office since. So this is such a unique time, you know, where I don't know much other than just kind of what I know right now. But when I'm talking about, you know, leadership, I'm talking about the guys on the field. Now, that being said, for me, you know, I think, as I said earlier, as a white man, you know, you can sometimes be a little bit cautious to speak out on issues like racism. And on the other turn, sometimes you can be too preachy saying this is what I think. This is a time, though, for everyone to engage. In the discourse that could lead to action.
Luke Kuechly, he officially was put on the reserve retired list. And then we see the website put out about an hour ago that he's considering a career in scouting. I'm just interested in what that relationship looks like and what conversations you've had with Luke about his future.
Yeah, and that, you know, obviously being in pro scouting, that would, you know, that falls under Marty. You know, I've had a great relationship with Luke at the times that I've been around him. He's my neighbor. So, that, you know, sometimes I'm out walking and he'll drive by and, you know, way to go do something. I'll see him. But, you know, I think it's great if it works out, you know, if it's what he wants to do. I know as anytime a player gets done playing, they're trying to figure out, you know, what they want to do next. So if it works out where he, you know, he can be a pro scout, and obviously the pro side are the guys that are evaluating other NFL players. And they really are, their mission is twofold. You know, they're helping us build the roster by finding other guys that fit what we do. And they're also providing us advanced scouting each week on the opponent. And if there's someone that was built for that, it's probably Luke Kuechly with his, you know, preparation and work. So, you know, I certainly hope it works out. I think Luke's a great, great, great person. Forget about who he was as a player, right? He's a great person that has a tremendous mind for the game based upon the way that he played. but you know, he's got to figure out what's right for him. And since the very first day he told me, hey, that he wasn't going to play, my advice to him has always been, hey, do what's right for you. You know, he's given a lot to Boston College, the Carolina Panthers, and the game of football. So I want to make sure he does what's right for him.
Hey, Coach, the league and the team made the announcement about training camp not being at Wofford, and obviously teams nowhere can travel. I'm curious, and I know everything is subject to change, but have you guys gone into the planning stages as to what a practice would look like under COVID-19 conditions? And can you share any of it? Thanks for your time.
Yes, absolutely. And, so obviously that came out yesterday. So I know we're putting together plans to host everything here. And obviously that relationship with Wofford is really important to us. And obviously that relationship with, you know, having a chance to go down to South Carolina and go to the fans was really important to us. But obviously there's some bigger issues here. So look forward to that, you know, getting back to that, you know, hopefully next year. But I think as it stands now, you know, we're in the planning stages now of, hey, how do we make it work here? How do we meet and be socially distanced while we meet? You know, do we meet in different parts of the stadium? You know, just the practice is one thing, really, the meetings, the locker rooms, all those things are a whole other. So, we're in the process of just trying to figure out how to make all those things work, to be quite honest with you. And Sean Patton's our director of football administration, he's a guy that, you know, figures out how to get things done. Eddie Levins, Mark Hart, we just have, you know, JD Rest, Todd Green, just a bunch of great people that are trying to figure out all those things. And then in terms of practices, you know, I think as with anything, as we get closer to the time, more information will come out. The NFL maybe will give us some guidelines. Obviously, we can't practice. You know, we had planned to practice with another team. We can't do that. So, as I said earlier, I think my job is to be the most flexible head coach and we have the most flexible staff we've ever had. But, I don't know how you socially distance at football practice, and maybe they'll say this is how you have to do it. But, you know, in the locker room, in the meeting rooms, you know, we have a whole stadium. We're fortunate that we actually, you know, work in our stadium, so there's a lot of room. We're in the process now of trying to figure out, you know, what do we need to buy, what do we need to do, how do we make this work? So it's a kind of a ongoing process.
Matt, I was curious what the rest of your virtual training, whatever this is, looks like over the next couple weeks, how long you see that going, and if players are allowed back in the facility before training camp, when you're planning on getting them in the facility.
So, we know that the off-season program is scheduled to go to the 26th. What we know is this week is virtual and next week is virtual. Then I'm sure we'll find out about the following 2 weeks, you know, are they allowed back in the building, or certain guys allowed back in the building, or is it still virtual? So we'll plan on it being virtual and then adapt, you know, and be excited if they actually come back in. And then, you know, as we're scheduled right now, I think training camp's scheduled to start on like the 28th. You have the option to bring rookies in 7 days early, quarterbacks and injured players 5 days early. I know some teams haven't done that in the past. We certainly will do that. I think one of the great challenges, Elena, this year will be to get guys practice ready, right? Like there's a certain level that you want to practice at, but you actually have to get guys be practice ready. So it'll take getting a couple days on the front end to make sure guys are in shape so that we don't pull hamstrings, and those things will be really important. So those are the dates we know now, and I know every day that something could change, you know, just, you know, and I appreciate that, and I don't complain about it. I just kind of deal.
Matt, obviously a lot of dealing with the present and the future. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about maybe in the past your time at Western Carolina and what that helped you know, teach you about being a coach, and maybe some lessons that you may have taken from there.
Well, I loved Western Carolina. I absolutely loved living in Cullowhee, Silva. I loved the players that I met there were awesome. You know, I recruited like once you kind of hit like, you know, I guess Shelby, Gastonia, all the way through, you know, the east side of Charlotte. And then down through, you know, Gaffney, Rock Hill, down all the way to, I used to stay at the Microtel in Rock Hill. What's it called? Apple Park or Orchard Park or Cherry Park or something. Back when I was an avid runner, I'd run in the park in the morning. Not so much anymore, but, and then up through Spartanburg and Greenville. So I had that area of recruiting. But I worked for Kent Briggs, who was a great man, still is a great man, and loved the university. He was an alum. Jeff Collins, who's the head coach of Georgia Tech, was the defensive coordinator, and he got me hired there. He obviously followed me as the head coach at Temple and is now at Georgia Tech. some great assistant coaches we had come through there, you know, Clayton White, Alan Mowbridge, Brent Key, who are big names in college football right now. So, you know, a great staff, great town, but I really love those players. You know, I get my haircut now by a young man named Pat, not this one. I did this one myself, my Clippers, but before this, you know, I got my haircut by Pat Leach, who has a barber, is a barber up in the north part of Charlotte, you know, played for us there. I mean, just so many great, great, great people that I met while I was there. So I think Cullowhee is a great town. Western North Carolina is filled with great people. And I love the football. You know, a lot of teams now have moved on to Division One, but I loved going to App State or having App State come to us and playing for the Mountain Jug. You know, I didn't love going to Georgia Southern, but they were a sight to see, you know, running the triple option back in the day. So really great football at the time, Firm and Wofford, all those teams. But I really liked – I learned a lot from Coach Briggs, and I learned a lot with the coaches I worked with.
What are you learning about your guys as you go through this process of trying to, I guess, get to know one another and also concentrate on trying to build a football team at the same time?
Well, I think we're learning a lot about – I think we're learning that we have a bunch of guys who work really hard. I mean, you know, like getting into a call on time, being on time, having your screen on, taking notes – answering questions. I think, you know, one of the keys to being a great teacher is that you have to constantly assess, right? You have to constantly ask questions and find out what guys know and where they are. And when I ask guys questions, when I talk to them, when I listen to them, I think you see that we have a mature team that's working on the football part of this at a high level. So I think what we can only find out right now is just, you know, guys' work ethic, guys' ability to how much information they can retain, how well they work at it. And as I said, I think one of the things that we've done is we've brought the technology, you know, like if there's a pendulum of like me and then, you know, an 18-year-old or 22-year-old rookie in terms of using technology, instead of asking them to, you know, write, use paper playbooks like I like, we've come this way, you know, and now I'm using apps and things that I don't really like, but I'm doing it and, you know, I'm finding I like it. You know, I'm finding new ways to do things. So, but I think we're finding guys are hardworking. We're finding out how much guys can learn, how much guys retain, and I'm pleased and I'm very proud with the team. I mean, there's it's all optional, right? And we have a lot of guys that have taken it really seriously, which I think is really cool.
Sharon, you listened to that entire interview with Matt Rhule. He is a unique individual. I think we have ourselves a winner there.
Yeah, it certainly seems like a very, very good leader. I mean, lots of players from his past schools have said nothing but good things about him, and you know, he seems to be on the right track here with the Panthers, and hopefully we'll be able to have training camp here starting in just a couple of months.
We'll take future Carolina Focus shows to get into that. Sharon, you've looked and you've been involved with some of the high school graduations around town here, also some of the college graduations. What have you found? What are some of the unique ways that we're celebrating the graduates of 2020?
Yeah, well, as you heard earlier, Concord is doing the drive-through graduations up there at Charlotte Motor Speedway. CMS, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, looked into that, but they have so many graduates that they just were not able to pull that off. They've got nearly 10,000 graduates, I think, this year. And so they're just doing some virtual online graduations. Next weekend, they're going to be holding – each school is doing something individual where they have an online type of ceremony where they call out a student's name and show a picture of them. And then they're going to be able to go through the drive-through line following that Monday at some point and pick up their diploma. So I know a lot of the high school students in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools were really disappointed in that. They actually started a petition to try to have some sort of an in-person graduation where they could walk across the stage. And I think they've got over about 5,500 signatures on that right now. But as of right now, that's what they're doing. And some of the colleges, I wanted to see what they were doing as well. And UNC Charlotte up here, they are postponing theirs. They haven't done anything yet, and they don't plan on doing anything virtually yet. They're going to postpone it and are looking at possibly having a December graduation ceremony combining with the fall graduates. And UNC Charlotte, one of the many schools that have obviously already, they've all already graduated per se. They finished school quite a while ago, and they just held a celebration video watch party on May 10th, and they're hoping to bring students back to campus in the fall to have a celebration, but I don't know how many people watch.
And that is, that's the group up in Chapel Hill, you're saying?
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, that's what they're planning. So I know that it's been a tough situation for so many graduates who are looking forward to that moment and when they can walk across the stage, but things just aren't possible right now with the situation that we're in with the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, Sharon, thanks for that great interview earlier in the show. And folks, stay tuned next week for Carolina Focus. Sharon, final words for our fans?
Well, we've got a really neat interview coming up next week about the Catawba Riverkeeper Foundation. So be sure to tune in and listen to that.
Beautiful, beautiful. For Sharon Thorsland, I'm Ed Billick. Guys, have a great Sunday and a great week. Bye now.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake.
It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 Central on CBS.